You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web and your number one source for after-show entertainment. From the AfterBuzz studios in Los Angeles, California, and streaming live on Ustream, this is AfterBuzz TV for Breaking Bad. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest Breaking Bad news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, picking up where the show leaves off and the buzz continues, it's AfterBuzz TV for Breaking Bad.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, John Comerford. I'm joined in the studio by Ian Kaiser, Phil Svitek. In the booth, we've got Jesse Janity. And for our very special guest, we have our very own Mr. Stuart Lyons in here. We want to thank you very much for joining, Stuart Lyons. Now, Stuart, you've been with Breaking Bad since the first episode, correct?
Since the pilot.
Since the pilot, big pardon. And you've been in the UPM, the unit production manager, line producer. I think all those titles incorporate the things that you're under your purview in the show, correct?
Absolutely.
So we'll get into that, first of all.
Sure.
But first thing we have to do is have to talk about the finale, season four finale called The Face Off.
For those of you listening, we did have an amazing cast Q&A broadcast hosted by Maria Menounos, live from the John Lovitz Comedy Club. Aaron Paul attended, Dee Norris and RJ Mitty. If you don't know who that is, you're not a fan of the show.
You don't know anything about what's going on. But now we get somebody who can really give us some nitty gritty about the show. So I just, as a fan, when you saw the finale for the first time, what were your thoughts? Did you like the way it came out? Were you happy with it? Were you proud of it? What were you thinking?
Stunned.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, but because you knew what was going to happen.
But you don't see it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you try and see it in pieces going and doing what I do.
Sure.
Because I have to put the pieces together.
Right.
Once they all come together and it's been edited and you see a performance and there's music and it's color corrected and all of a sudden it's just all of a piece, that's a different experience. And you try to enjoy that as a viewer as much as anybody.
Right.
But I like seeing it with my family because I don't tell them anything.
Oh, that's great. That was one of my questions.
They know. No one knows anything.
So you must be going like, I can't wait for that to see this.
Well, I had my wife's hand in mine, and I was waiting for, the convulsive grab at key points, and that happened.
Great.
And that's the fun part.
Oh, my God, that must be amazing.
Yeah, I have my own audience.
When you saw, because this is the most dramatic image, when, the face-off, so to speak, actually is off his face.
Right.
When you see Gus's face. So when you that's I assume one of the pieces that you haven't seen in its context. So when you saw that, were you going, man, that played the way we wanted it to?
Absolutely. Well, there's a lot more to that effect than you see when it's being filmed.
Because there's a lot of CG involved.
There's CG, but there is also a mask that's there.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the computer graphics that get added in afterwards. So I don't see the computer graphics until the whole thing has been composited.
Right.
And it's just a different experience.
Yeah.
Seeing Giancarlo walking around with that mask on for the whole day.
On the set,
That was...
that was weird. Huh?
It was pretty gruesome in and of itself, and then they take it to this whole other level with CGI. I mean, those are the Walking Dead guys.
Right.
And they're just... geniuses.
And I got to say, when we saw it with a crowd, we normally don't have that big of a crowd when we saw it. They were cheering when that bomb went off. And then they saw him walk out.
And they were like, what?
No way! How could he survive? And then he does that. I mean, just a great little character beat of him fixing his tie right before you actually see what happened to him. I don't even work on the show, and I'm going, you got to be proud of that moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that must be just a thrill. And now your whole family watched it, correct?
Yeah.
And you have how many children, if I may ask?
Well, I have six.
Now, were they all with you when they were watching this particular one?
No.
So were any of them there at this time?
Sure.
Okay, and so were they going crazy?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are they going, Dad, you're awesome?
Well, it's not just me.
I know, but yeah.
I just there are a lot that. Of people involved.
Absolutely.
We have about 100 people working on the show. About 120 people a day.
Oh,
work
my God.
On the show when we're filming.
120 people.
And then there's a whole post group. And
sure.
So there's a lot of people fulfilling Vince's vision.
Oh my God.
Well,
that's what we're there for.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Let me. I mean, the other kind of. Were you guys nervous about the fact, you know, the chart with Salamanca and going down that? To pull that off was so strategic. And, you know, in watching it with 180-plus people, it was pulled off amazingly. At first, when I saw it, I was like, okay, wow, this is really boring. And then as it built and built, it turned into the funniest thing for me in television ever because of that patience to do it.
Yeah.
And follow through.
That takes a lot of guts, if you ask
that
me.
Is.
I mean, but this show is always taking its time. It allows things to breathe. It leaves the moment. It's not in a hurry.
No.
It just lets it be.
And I guess my question is, you know, were you guys ever nervous about being able to pull that off or anything in particular for you guys, at least for the season finale, if not the season?
I don't think that was anything we were worried about.
So, but speaking to that, do you ever go, God, I don't know if this is going to play. I'm not sure.
I mean, there are parts of the show that I don't necessarily understand fully, and then I'll read an interview that Vince gives, and I've been reading all the follow-up from the show. And yeah, I'll still get an insight that he may not have shared at the time.
Got it.
But the writing is absolutely clear and fantastic, and it exists that way from the earliest time that I see it, which is in sometimes I'll see it in cards that are on a wall, but much more frequently I'll see it in outlines. And we can plan the show from the outlines.
Really? It's that?
Once those writers and Vince have blessed that story and say, this is where we're going, that's where they go. There's very, very little deviation.
Mm-hmm. Once those cards have been set.
Once the outline has arrived to us.
And earlier you had mentioned to us before the show started, there's 27 weeks or so of writing.
Well, for season four, there was 27 weeks of writing before we started production.
Gosh.
And then they continued to write
for
about another dozen weeks.
Yeah. Wow.
I guess we were pretty much toward episode 9 or 10 before they finally finished up with episode 13.
Wow,
I'm curious,
and that's not quite correct because Vince wrote 12 and 13.
Gotcha.
He wrote them. He directed them.
I understand. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. Go ahead.
I'm curious with Gus getting his part of his face blown off, and that to me played like a big budget feature film effect, as did a lot of the stuff and the tension in that episode. I'm curious. In your role as a line producer, if there's ever anything that you have to say, we have to find a different way to do this, or we can't pull this off, or is there always an alternative, or is there things you've had to scrap completely maybe?
No, they just want us to spend as much money as we can possibly spend, and we've succeeded in doing that. No, there's a budget, and we try to stay within that as much as we can. That's part of my job.
Sure.
But Vince is a very experienced director, and we have a really inventive producing team that goes after achieving this vision.
Well, let me ask you this then, because you know your budget for the season, so to speak, I would imagine. So do you ever have to, let's say we know we're going to have a very expensive episode 12. Do you have to rob from 9 to make sure you have enough leftover?
It's all one bucket.
It is. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's divided into 13 pieces, but
you got the bucket and you just got to make it work.
You've got to make it work. Mm-hmm. That's the goal. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't. But it's
well, give me some inside scoop on a very creative but cheap way to get the same effect. I mean,
that effect?
No, not that effect. But just like, you know, I'm trying to think of an example that I have, but you know, when we're doing our own little movies, when we know we have no money, but we have to come up with a really creative solution. And I can't think of any right now, but I love hearing those stories. Like, we had no money to do this.
Well,
here's what we came up with.
I mean, not to get in too much into this, but there was a scene that we had, and then we needed an insert shot, and so we created, you know, we just literally made up a portion of the set and shot that as an insert, you know?
Yeah.
So that's, for us, was a cheap way of doing that.
Well, I mean,
there
are some things that we have done. There was a sequence this year where we went to Four Corners.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Now, Four Corners is maybe where a whole bunch of things come together,
right?
But there's nothing there. And it's 6 hours away from Albuquerque. And it was very important for Skyler's story that we do this. But we could not bring Skyler there for a variety of reasons. And we couldn't send a full camera crew there. So we shot that. I directed that portion with a Canon D5.
Wow.
And yet it intercut beautifully with a 35 millimeter.
Couldn't tell.
Because you just can't tell.
Yeah.
And then we, you know, we did shots of Anagun. Now that's an example. And then we created the medallion on our soundstage. So it's really in about four different locations.
Sure.
And by the time it was all cut together, it just went beautifully. Time lapse is something that we've been doing.
Yeah, we've noticed that, especially in the last.
That grew out of a conversation between Vince and me. Following the explosion in the gas station, I had taken some pictures on my iPhone. And when I put all the photos together, it was we started talking about time lapse, and we have a couple of guys who come out, and they do that as a separate unit. That's not something we could do with a full-on unit. So we're looking for those kinds of things. We're grabbing things. We don't have a full second unit. Our first unit moves incredibly quickly. We get 40 setups on an average day, pretty much.
Whoa!
You know, going in and out, and yet achieving this level of quality.
Yeah, that is fast.
Well, when you have actors who are almost always word perfect.
Well,
You know, you're not doing well. Gee, you almost got there.
Yeah. No.
No. I mean, there's sometimes, but it's
average takes what, 2-3, and you're on?
About three. Yeah,
that's incredible. That's amazing.
Maybe it goes four. Occasionally we'll run into something mechanical that is very difficult. The last shot that you're talking about with the face-off, Vince did 19 takes of just that camera
just
move.
Just that slide?
Just that slide to make sure that that was what he wanted. And I just read something that he used take 19.
Wow.
So there was... It was a little bit, I mean, we're standing there, we're watching, you know, take after take, and the light's going, of course. But it all worked out.
So that's on location somewhere?
That was an abandoned nursing home.
Wow.
It had been abandoned the year before, so it was a real nursing home.
Sure.
We brought in all the dressing, we brought in the bingo caller, we brought in the old people.
Speaking of on location, so you guys shoot in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Completely,
I'm curious, what are the benefits and the drawbacks of something like that in terms of, you know, you don't necessarily have the infrastructure of L.A., and I would imagine there's probably heat issues and things like that sometimes.
Well, there's heat and cold. I mean, it's not Nevada. People think that this place is Arizona or Nevada or something like that. We had
high desert.
It is very high. Our temperature range this year was from a minus 30 wind chill on one day to 102.
In one day?
No. Over the course of the season.
All right, great.
So that was our weather range, and yet it all plays.
Yeah, it plays.
You know, like it's one season pretty much. That's tricky. The reason we went to New Mexico, when the show was starting up, which was 2007, we shot the pilot. New Mexico had just started the rebate program.
Sure.
I think maybe the year previous. And a Sony executive said to Vince, look, you've set the show. I think it was in Imperial Valley.
Mm-hmm.
If we take the show to New Mexico, there's a really good chance that we can use that rebate to enhance the quality of the show. Vince came out, looked at New Mexico, decided to write the show for Albuquerque, and I flew in January 2007 and started setting up the pilot.
You've done a great. It is because the. Yeah. I mean, the setting does feel like a character at times. You know.
Yeah, they've done a great job. Done a great job of making that. Just integrating that.
And we've gotten great cooperation from Albuquerque, the mayor's office.
Yeah.
We've been through two administrations, and they just they just support one Democratic, one Republican. They both really support the show, and understand what we're doing is not putting anything in a bad light. We're creating.
No, I don't think so. And how are the locals liking it? They must be having a good time.
Oh, they love it.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I have an email today. We've been sending DVDs to a couple of soldiers in Afghanistan. And they love it because they like seeing their town and
and
it reminds them of home. Hopefully, it doesn't remind them of using that went into the service. That's not it at all. But I mean, it is something that I think the people from Albuquerque can take pride that one of the signature television series of all time has been done in their city.
Yeah,
and I don't think you can ignore that.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah, I have one more question. When you're talking about that, they're very supportive, but there is some of the content is obviously, you know, for AMC, there's graphic language, there's graphic scenes. Another question I had was, is there any ever issues getting things on air? And does AMC or do they ever take issue with anything you've tried to do?
I think there's always been, you know, some dialogue about that, but their trust in Vince is pretty considerable. There have only been a very few number of cases. And in each time, I have felt that the creative meeting point, I don't even want to say compromise, because I don't think that's really the issue here. But the creative meeting point has really taken something even higher, even better.
So they found an even better way.
Yeah.
That's
that,
amazing.
That tends to be much more. I mean, we still have to... follow the general television rules. There's nothing that's on the show. People were talking about like Denny's. We were our opening episode this year. Mm-hmm. They go out to Denny's.
Yeah.
Denny's didn't pay us. We paid them. There were a couple of issues of product placement, but they're clearly identified in the credits.
Uh-huh.
The video game and the that terrific car that he... Loves
yeah.
I mean, those were product placements, and really, you got to hand it to Chrysler to blow up. The whole idea was this was a fantastic car that this kid really wanted, and isn't that the message they're trying to get across? Yeah. Much more than let's blow up a car,
exactly.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's always fun
to blow
things.
Up a car.
Yeah, we get to blow it up.
Awesome! How many people were that day? I would just want to see. Everyone to see it blow.
Well,
right?
If you've never seen an explosion in real life, you don't have an idea of what they're like, because all movie explosions, all TV explosions, occur slightly high speed or even, you know, slow motion or even very slow motion, because it is a real explosion is so fast it's actually possible to miss it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a shutter comes down every 24 seconds. An explosion can happen in a 48th of a second, or even faster. I mean, they're fast, and they're really powerful. I'm always amazed.
Yeah, you can really feel it. How far away are you guys?
Well, on that explosion, I guess I was about 200 feet back. I mean, you don't try and go to where is it safe and then go another foot. That's not what you do with the explosion.
You don't do that?
No.
I've heard that complaint, you know. A lot of my friends were crewmen on Shutter Island, Martin Scorsese's movie, and they were like, they set up the whole rig for an explosion. They were like, "What? You're telling me to go back? I just built this thing to explode. I want to see it explode."
And
that wasn't your complaint?
No,
no,
no. I just did a show that had a grizzly bear in it. That thing was like 900 pounds and 7 feet tall. Nobody wanted to be around it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody. I mean, nobody was like peeking around. Nobody. They just
I would have slathered myself up with honey and said, come on, let's go. Let's dance. No?
No. Okay. It's a big animal. It's really big.
So I guess the other thing I wanted to ask is not everybody knows. Okay, so for instance, they've been riding for weeks.
Sure.
And you get it.
Okay.
What do you get to do?
Well, there are a number of things that happen almost simultaneously. Mm-hmm. First thing I'm trying to do is I do what's called a breakdown. And literally, I take the script apart. Who's in what scene? What's in what scene? Where is every scene? And I try and, first off, schedule that and budget that. And then there are things that need lead time more than one episode. I mean, that mask that you saw Giancarlo wearing, that was basically about 3 months from the time that it was conceived of to the time
we
actually
need it.
And I would say that two of those months were needed for the complete fabrication and how we were doing it. At the ending of last year, we had a very complicated car stunt where the car drives into
this.
That wasn't just two people taking a car hit. I mean, there was. There were about four different elements that had come together, and including a CGI component where the people were turned into mannequins,
right.
And I mean mannequin in a computer sense. Mm-hmm. And then the hit was, and that all had to be choreographed. And Vince is giving input at every step of the way. You know, and Michelle is giving input, Michelle McLaren, who's one of our executive producers, and Melissa Bernstein, myself, Michael Slovis, the production designer as well. Mark Freeborn. So, I mean, there's a lot of input, but, I mean, ultimately Vince cares about every single detail.
Sure.
And that takes time because you'd love to get everything right the first time or the way he wants it the first time. But he's fine-tuning everything.
Of course. So he's responsible for breaking it down, scheduling it, and then putting all those pieces
And then putting
together.
All those people, making sure that I have the facilities to do it, I have the equipment to do it. You were asking about infrastructure in New Mexico. It's not bad, but it's not like Los Angeles where you can pick up a phone and get anything.
Exactly.
So pretty much if I don't have it and then I need it, it's 2 days away.
So what's your lead time, man? You get the script here and we're going to be shooting this episode. How far ahead?
But we have a full-on prep for each show that takes 8 days. Each show takes 8 days.
8 days to shoot.
So we never, from the time that we start shooting till the last day of the last episode, we stay in production. There are no breaks unless we run into, you know, a Christmas hiatus.
Right.
Sounds exhausting.
Is it?
Yeah, by the end, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
So and are they, how many hours a day, roughly? Did everybody an
the
idea?
The shooting crew's about 12 to 14 hours.
12 to 14.
Occasionally we'll push it past 14, but we don't like doing that. I mean, we're in a marathon. It's not like doing a low-budget movie where everybody goes crazy.
Yeah, exactly, for 4 weeks or whatever.
For 4 weeks of lower budget, you know, maybe 30 days if they've got a little more money. But, you know, you can do that and then collapse. We are going for 104 days.
104 days. And you do have, what, a day or do you take 2 days off in the week? Just the one? No days?
No, we take off Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday, okay.
Usually.
Okay, usually in the exit.
Well, I mean, sometimes there's construction issues.
Yeah.
There are striking, prepping a location. Occasionally, there'll be a location that we do not have access to during the week. The pilot was shot on a Tuesday through Sunday schedule because we had a lot of stuff in a school, and they did not want to interrupt the school year. But we've been Monday through Friday for... Well, really, since season one.
All right, so...
You used to work in sitcoms, too, right?
Or still do sometimes. Yeah, I was just about to ask that.
I'm curious the difference between... Because this sounds grueling, and everything you hear about sitcoms is a little cush, right?
Well, I did two at once.
So you get to double down with the sitcoms.
Or two jobs on the same
thing.
No, I mean, sitcoms are a great way to have a very controlled experience in terms of... Of writing, they're wonderful in terms of for the actors and the interaction with the audience. That can be really special for an audience sitcom.
Yeah.
I've just finished two sitcoms in the last few weeks that are single camera sitcoms right now. Although there seems to be a swing back to the old style. I mean, those shows seem to be working this year, and the dramas seem to be not quite clicking. But for what I do. This is more movie making. This is
it may be
harder, but the satisfactions for doing this are really remarkable. I mean, when you see it all come together, it's a lot of fun.
Extremely rewarding.
Yeah.
And so, when you first read the pilot, what was your initial? Because you've read a lot of pilots and you've read a lot of scripts. What was your initial reaction to the pilot?
I was terrified.
Why is that? Terrified. Holy crap.
Well, I was in New Mexico. I hadn't been a UPM in New Mexico before.
Okay.
I didn't know anybody. We didn't have a studio. Mm-hmm. It wasn't cast at the time. It was extremely ambitious. Mm-hmm. And we had very little time from the time I started to the time we started shooting. Was only about 6 weeks. It was Vince. It was Karen Moore was also a producer on at the time.
And you weren't even cast yet.
No, I mean Brian started circling in. I guess about 3-4 weeks. But there was no studio. We wound up shooting it in a warehouse that didn't have water, didn't have power. It had just been finished, and we were lucky to find that. Now the studios that we're in now are real state-of-the-art kinds of things, but they hadn't been built. They weren't finished at the time we were doing the pilot. So that was pretty – I was just so happy.
Just lucky that it got done, right? Oh.
it was just a great feeling when we – in many ways, my job is
– Easier now?
Well, it's a lot easier now. I've got a great team, and we've been doing it for a while, and we've got a great crew, and it's still hard, but it's not that feeling like you're on a tightrope without a net. Uh-huh. But I was really happy when we rolled cameras for that first day of the pilot, because once we roll cameras, it means that all the toys have pretty much
we're ready to go.
So they didn't have, aside from there was no studio, there were no, we shipped all the equipment and all the electric came in.
Right.
It really was a lot of planning.
No, but when you read that pilot, did you have any kind of feeling one way or another, like, oh yeah, I can see this going, this thing's going to be good?
I think that anybody who would read about a cancer victim turned meth dealer would just figure out that was going to go. it's not like any other show.
I know, that's what I'm wondering. I was like, would somebody read that? You've read so many, would you look at this and go, are they crazy?
You know what, it
or is the writing so good? But this is amazing.
The writing was so clear. The characterizations were so unique. The places that we were taking it and the locations that we were finding and just the feeling around it, it was really remarkable. Mm-hmm. Also, you had some really top people who creatively, that they know what they're doing.
Right.
Vince had been doing X-Files for, 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Johnson, who was also who is an executive producer on the show, he's the guy behind Diner, Notebook.
Yeah.
Narnia. These are not amateurs. When they throw their time, their effort behind this, it really means something. Having said that, when Vince went to pitch the show, and I forget whether it was at AMC that he got this response or Sony. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I don't remember. But literally when he told them the idea for this show, I think it was AMC, they said, this is the worst idea for any TV series we've ever heard, and we're buying it. Because the goal really was to make memorable television.
Mm-hmm.
And we've done that. And Vince has done that.
Clearly. Absolutely. Wow, this is the worst idea, but we're buying it.
Yeah, I don't know which executive was behind
that. I want to be in the room when they say that.
I mean, look what AMC did with their first two shows out the gate were Mad Men and Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly they knew what they were doing.
Yes.
We Aaron Paul touched on this a little bit. Our understanding was he was supposed to be killed off the first season.
Uh-huh.
And he was just happy that he got to keep his job. I'm curious, the behind the scenes of, was it just that the interplay between the two of them after a few episodes, you see that has to continue, or how does that decision
I think that, that decision came about after the pilot. But once we found that out, that he was about to be killed off, we have teased him unmercifully for every year.
He can kill you at any time, buddy.
Oh, well... he came up to me at the beginning of the second season and told me he bought a condo, and I said, they didn't tell you? So, yes, we have a very good time.
Teasing
him about that.
I would imagine anybody on the show would be worried. Because you guys would kill anybody for anything.
Well, except that getting killed on Breaking Bad is guaranteed of a couple of more episodes.
Because they always bring you back for something.
They'll bring you back. Yeah. You're never really dead.
We forgot to talk about this here. This is kind of interesting. Let's explore that area.
Well, Speaking of which.
Affects my job.
Yeah.
I have to keep all that stuff around.
Nice.
Once a character's dead.
You keep all the stuff.
I have to keep everything.
Keep it in storage. We'll bring him back.
Yep.
Well, what was it like to call up Gail and say, all right, we need you for season 4, but you're going to be filming the most hilarious video? You know what I mean? That's your role in season 4.
Yeah.
That was shot specifically later.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We shot him, over 3 different episodes in order to get the pieces that you saw, including that... video, which was essentially like one take for him singing that song, and was just, we all got up and applauded after. It was just an amazing thing to do that whole song in the Gale character. That's not who he is.
Yeah.
He's not an obsequious guy. You know, he's not unctuous.
Yeah.
He's really charming, and he's a brilliant actor.
Wow.
He's great on Flight of the Conchords. He does some very, very funny stuff.
Oh, he's fearless.
Level of humor. Yeah.
He's fearless. Yeah. I mean, that's what it takes to act at that level. It's, it's just committing totally and doing that.
So talk a little bit about the actors, because you guys have been blessed. Whoever's casting, everybody in casting, I should say, has just done an amazing job. There's not a bad note in the bunch. Not that you would expect that, but I mean, that must be. I mean, you got great writing, and these guys can deliver it so well.
Well, you
got
to speak about the car wash owner.
We're curious if are they coming from L.A. or New Mexico, these actors?
Most of the major roles, with the exception, say, of Bogdan, the car wash, are coming from Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
Some come from Texas. For example, the woman who is. Bob Odenkirk's secretary.
Yeah, had a great little bit in this.
Great little bit. Yeah. just terrific. She comes up from Texas. There are a few more people from. I mean,
Walt
there are some.
Can't get a break. Even the secretary is just carrying something over on him.
Absolutely. I mean, and this backstory. I mean, you just.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just terrific that Saul is smitten with her.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, look at her. It's like, okay, well, there's got to be a story there, and yet we don't tell every story that is involved. There's a whole backstory in Peru with Giancarlo.
Yeah.
I haven't a clue as to what it is.
Yeah, I'm always what the hell's going on? What's the connection there?
You know, Vince doesn't feel that we have to...
No, we don't. Know everything.
Paint everything out. But in terms of Bogdan, he brought his son in to be an extra.
And this is the car wash owner.
And this was for the pilot.
Mm-hmm.
And the extra casting person, Gwen Savage, passed him up to the casting person, who then presented him to Vince. And he did that little bit. Cut to 4 years later, he's moved out of Albuquerque. He is a rocket scientist. He's now teaching at University of Chicago. He's not a slouch at all. This is a major smart guy.
Yeah.
And they brought him back for the sale. And he's hitting the scenes. I mean, you see him when he's dealing with Anna Gunn.
Yeah.
And she makes that initial presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You can get the feeling of when he talks about that he built the business.
Yeah.
Not like he's reciting a line.
It's like
you can see
him.
Didn't
for a second. This guy looked like you went to a car wash and you got him. with lock, stock, and barrel.
We went to Sandia Labs and got him.
Exactly, and he's a rocket scientist.
And Wendy, the street whore, she's a soccer mom. She the meth whore who's with. She's a very stunning lady who's not done very much acting at all, and is a triathlete. She's in terrific shape. She comes in, and the very first scene she's doing is, in episode 2 of the whole show, and she's taking her panties down and jumping on top of Aaron Paul and having kind of meth sex. I mean, and then she's doing, giving head in time lapse. And there's a great story there because one of those cars, and I won't say which one, is actually a real person who did not realize we were filming and came up and was looking for the services that seemed to be implied. And she basically said, "We're filming this. You may want to leave."
Thank you, Jesse.
But, with Bogdan, I was, for somebody who wasn't a trained actor, when they have that power shift and he goes to get back, unbelievable. It was like, finally after this position of power he was in the whole time. But I do want to ask about that too.
Sure.
With, a lot is referred to as eyebrows and things like that.
Right.
When is that stuff written? I mean, on set, does that happen? Does that happen once they're cast? Does that start to get written? How does that happen for characters when...
Almost nothing gets written on the set.
So,
almost nothing. Everything has been written or realized by the actors. By the writers and Vince. I mean, they knew this guy from the pilot. it's hard.
So they'd included it after they'd met him and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
obviously. I didn't. You know, we're wondering. Did they write it in? Did they give him those eyebrows?
Let's find a guy with giant eyebrows.
No,
I could do.
Although you know, they might want to try and do that in some things. I'm trying to think, but no. In that case, I think they took a look at the audition tape and they went, "Oh,
that's the guy.
Dull. This is the guy.
Exactly.
This is the guy." And then they just wrote to the eyebrows.
And you were talking about Vince overseeing every aspect of you know, production. There's a production designer, obviously. We asked the actors about color palette on the show.
Okay.
And we couldn't really get it. They said it's there.
But I don't know what it means. They don't care.
So we're wondering how much.
Can you speak to the color palette?
Well, okay. Let's just sort of say that that camera's taking the picture of the two of you guys right now. That wouldn't work in a drama because you're both wearing the same color.
Sure.
So you want each character who appears to be in a color that both expresses their character and that doesn't look like everybody's wearing a blue shirt.
Right.
That has to be pre-planned.
Mm-hmm.
And that planning would get set up with Vince at the beginning of the season. Mark Freeborn, the production designer, would be a part of that. Kathleen DeToro, our costume designer, would be part of that as well, and they would pick out swatches of colors for each character for the season. And with Vince, sometimes there would be transitions. I want them to start in this, and then go to darker shades as maybe the character is getting darker, committing murders, things like that. I mean, those are kinds of things that he cares about,
right?
And even if people aren't necessarily consciously aware of this kind of stuff, it contributes to the overall effect.
Well, now, did he pick colors that would actually represent an idea, or they metaphorical in some sense, or were they, for instance, we saw a lot of reds and
green is money. Obviously,
okay,
green is growth. Green is hope. Mm-hmm. There's almost no green in the pilot,
except for the logo.
Yeah.
But I mean, for instance, and then yellows. We saw a lot of blues and reds this season,
right?
And so were those, obviously they're specific.
These are all choices that are being made.
Yeah.
And they're not being made during the episode.
They're pre-planned. And this is the palette we're going to use. Right. We're going to go from red to whatever, or
and
as
it's not
the progression
just
goes.
Clothing colors, because you don't also want this color to be the same as this
color.
Because then there's no differentiation.
Yeah.
So every decision in terms of clothing, wall colors, car colors, these are all conscious, creative decisions that we care about.
Yes,
and Vince
we care
cares
about.
About Vince
but we want to know
what's
the thought process. Why the red? Why is the red representative of?
I think that you see what it's representative.
Okay, but I want to know what he wants.
We didn't fail.
We have all these fights about what it represents. So people have different ideas. So we're trying to get the inside scoop about.
Well, I think Mark and Vince should speak to that.
All right.
And so, also, by the way, it's a big thing for camera. Too.
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, reds don't show up terribly well photographically. They're tricky. They're tricky.
Well,
patterns are tricky.
The big question, I guess, of the fans this season was, what is with the minerals, aka the rocks or whatever you want to call them, of Hank's
obsession with the minerals?
And you know, we heard that Vince was like, "Oh, it doesn't mean anything," but. You know, to show everything means something, it has to mean something. So we tried to get Dean's take on it as to what he assigned it. Do you know anything about that?
No, but there is one kind of funny little element to it. One of the jobs of the set dressers, and we have a great one, Mark Flowers, is to make you think when you're seeing somebody's room that there was a life there and that you know something about the people.
Mm-hmm.
Who are there. You see the purple obsession of Marie in her house.
Yes.
You see how dowdy Walt's house is.
His own place.
So everything contributes to that vision. In Gail's apartment, there's a rock collection that was put in. There's also climbing photos.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of stuff where you really got a feeling for this guy.
Who this guy was.
This was like a real guy who had a real life, who was an interesting person.
Mm-hmm.
And that is part of what made his death so powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a rock collection there. That showed up accidentally. I mean, that was just something that I guess Mark decided to do. It wasn't until after we started with Dean's Rock Collection that
we started making that connection.
That we made that connection. But that's serendipity.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't any connection. That wasn't to show a common element between, mm-hmm. say, Gail and.
Okay,
that, and,
yeah.
And, mm-hmm. But I'll tell you, 5 years from now, somebody yeah. doesn't know that'll go through and yeah. go. And then they lay that yeah, exactly. in, and then he
well,
brings that
that's
over.
That's the discussions we have with the fans. You know, but no, I think this means this, and you know,
most things mean something.
Something. For instance, there was a lot of talk about why they used the Bridge on the River Kwai, that particular cut from that with Alec Guinness. What have I done? What have I done? And I'd read or heard in an interview with Vince that, well, no.
They owned it. Sony owned it.
So we used it. It wasn't really, I didn't.
Yeah,
there was no
but
other,
Sony owns a lot of things.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. But he, according to him, it was like, well, no, I just used it.
It
is he being coy?
A little bit.
Okay.
I think there's much more of a design there.
I would think.
I mean, when you get five things to select from and you pick yeah. that one thing.
There's a reason why you picked it.
You pick, yeah. Okay. And it may not even be something that he's conscious of. I mean,
right.
he's unusual. He's got you know, great intellect,
mm-hmm.
but he also, you know, he writes emotions beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
So he has access to both those things. So he can make an intellectual decision, and
sure.
he can make an emotional decision.
Mm-hmm.
Same guy. There aren't many people who can do that.
I'm curious about the lab assistant who got killed and
sure.
Gail's death and. Also, the end of the season finale, saying
right.
that Walt likely poisoned
likely.
The kid.
Likely?
Did. I'll say did. I'll give it. So
sure.
I'm curious if there's discussions about how far you can take Walt to the dark side and have people still be sympathetic. And I'm also curious if it matters if people are sympathetic to Walt. Like, are you still going to be compelled? Because it has become an ensemble and you care about Jesse. Like, do you have to stay sympathetic for Walt to at work, or can you start to hate Walt?
Vince has been extremely clear about this from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't completely understand until really this year that
how
he
far.
Was how
yeah.
far
he's serious,
it was gonna, that
yeah.
he's serious about it. What I was always hearing was that he wanted to take the guy from take Walt from being Mr. Chips to Scarface. But there was something that hadn't ever been done before. When you saw that movie, you still stayed sympathetic to
mm-hmm.
Scarface.
Mm-hmm.
Vince's intention, which he really expressed this year, is that by the time we get to the end of the show, Walt will die, and you're supposed to hate him. We are taking.
I didn't hear
we,
that. That's unbelievable.
I mean, this is what has been printed.
Here's our
exclusive. Well, it's been printed before. I mean, we're taking
exclusive.
The protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
of the show, and we're turning him into the antagonist.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's never been done before because no one's had that kind of time frame,
mm-hmm.
creative time frame, to allow that to happen. You can't do that in a movie. It takes most of a movie to get you on board the hero's mm-hmm. journey.
Right.
And then to take the hero and turn him into the villain and still have him sympathetic, that's something that really, where has that been tried before? I mean, to some extent, did they try and do that in the second Star Wars trilogy, which preceded? I mean,
mm-hmm.
were they trying to make you sympathetic to Darth Vader? I don't know. Once he blew up Alderaan, I was waiting for this guy to die. I mean, I didn't care that his mother mistreated him.
Yeah.
He blew up a whole planet. So that's what Vince has said he's going to try and do. Now, it's amazing to some people that we're still sympathetic to Walt. After all, we've seen him.
Yeah, he's killed.
He's killed.
But people killed.
Well, I mean, you know, not.
I mean, he's killed a lot of
yes,
people.
Yes, exactly.
Indirectly, he's killed hundreds of people
yes,
by the airplane crash.
Exactly.
So he's killed through action, by
yeah.
strangulation.
And we have people
gunshots,
cheering for him.
And watching a girl die.
Yeah. Just not doing anything. Just
not doing anything. Letting her die.
Poisoning a child.
Poisoning a child. Setting that up.
Yeah.
I mean.
But the great thing is, so he does that, but he cares about his family. He's not a bad guy, and that's what I
He's
love.
He's not a bad guy. No, but he is a bad guy. That's the
no,
point.
But I love that because at the end of the day, I think the reason it works is because there is that rationalization, and for me, that's what it is. It's okay, so he's done that things, but he cares.
I think the most interesting segment in terms of going on this journey really was in the first season where he is invited. I think it was our third regular episode. He's invited to a party thrown by, in essence, Bill Gates.
Right, his former friend.
And the guy says, colleagues. I hear you are sick, and I'll pay for everything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But by that time, Walt's already killed two people. Mm-hmm. And he's gotten a taste of what will flower into the Heisenberg character.
Right.
And the idea of losing control again and being a non-entity.
Mm-hmm. And in debt to this person.
Well, what debt? I mean, he thinks he's going
to
die.
No, what I'm saying, if this guy paid for everything, that's just another thing for me to feel.
Another thing that he could not control.
And this is my point.
And it's just, that episode, I remember reading that episode and thinking, wow, if we can pull this one off, if we can make people understand, then this is really remarkable. And that episode, more than anything else, kind of opened the door in my eyes to how unique this journey was really, really going to take us, and how we would play against, everybody's expectations as to what normal people would do in that situation. That was really a departure, and more so than really a lot of other things.
Okay, well, on that note, I think we should head towards our commercial break. So why don't we do that now, Jesse, if you can take us away to a commercial.
Want to find out what the AfterBuzz is about?
Janice is a drama queen.
This is the divide that is going to carry the series.
Give us a call. 424-256-1729. 424-256-1729.
It's television, and they want it to be as dramatic as possible.
I mean, it's Shakespearean.
You never know what goes on behind closed doors.
Find out why AfterBuzz TV is the number one source for after-show content.
Now, in the eyes of Jimmy, Nucky is a villain.
424-256-1729. 424-256-1729.
I mean, who would you guys rather hear that from? Your husband or your best friend?
The wig!
The wig will come out that wig.
When the TV show is over, get your
anything you
want to
add?
It's fine if you guys are getting what you want.
Oh, we'll get it. Are you kidding me? We'd do this for hours.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah. We're back. Sorry. We were chatting.
You got a little
just talking about what super geek fans we are.
Exactly. So it's been fascinating to hear all about this. First of all, we want to thank you again for joining
us.
It's been a pleasure to have you. Last few things before we go. So any last questions, comments?
Well, I do want to say, I mean, I'm glad to hear that Vince... he is a mastermind, because if you listen to his podcasts the way we do, the ones made by AMC, honestly, you could pretty much quote him, we just got lucky. Oh, I don't know why. It just happened that way. But I'm glad to know that there is a design, because I do feel...
He breaks his ass off, and we all do, too.
Is he just modest? He's humble about it? Yeah, he's just incredible. Talk a little bit about that process. He's just modest about his, and he's just, what is he?
He's modest. He's grateful. Mm-hmm. He's also exacting and demanding. Mm-hmm. But he appreciates when he gets stuff that sometimes exceeds what he was hoping. Uh-huh. But he has a vision for this that we're there to fulfill.
And it would seem to me that working in this Breaking Bad environment, you guys really want to do the best you can. And not that you wouldn't do it every time, but for some reason it seems to be elevated in this area.
It is. I mean, this is the assignment of a lifetime for most of us.
Sure.
And the only people who don't know it's an assignment of a lifetime haven't really lived that much and haven't been involved with TV that much.
And is that what you're most proud of, that? Right there, or
Breaking Bad?
No, I mean of that being involved in something that you know is going to be.
Yes, if we wanted to, I mean there are careers that are.
Yeah.
I think the saying is nobody put a gun to your head and said go into show business.
That's true.
I mean,
you can get a paycheck anywhere, right?
But maybe not in this economy. Wow. But it's certainly a calling, and you do sacrifice. I'm away from home for 8 months.
Yeah,
I'm more than anybody else. I'm first one in and pretty much the last one out. But there are certain things that are worth it. And when you're doing stuff where people care this much, it's not just another job. It's not another job to the people in New Mexico. When the scripts come out, pretty much you'll see people all over the place reading them because they really care about the kind of job that they're doing on the show. They know it's special. The word in New Mexico is the way to get the job on a job on Breaking Bad is to wait for someone to die. Because nobody's leaving on their own.
How was that atmosphere created? Just that because the writing is so good, because the exec producers just raised the bar. This is what we're shooting for. How did that happen?
I think it's because nobody is phoning it in, and if I'm not phoning it in, I'm not letting the people who I hire phone it in.
Right.
I mean,
so everybody's holding everybody else to that same standard,
and it's like a game of tennis. I mean, if somebody's hitting the ball back to you,
you got to hit it. Yeah,
you know, and if you play with bad people, you don't play a great game of tennis. But if you're working with these actors, with this writing, with these directors, you better really, you know, come with good stuff.
Yeah,
because they'll demand it, and it's fun. I mean, that's the fun part, to do stuff that just blows people's minds, to get a tortoise and blow it up, to land an airplane in the middle of nowhere, to do these desert shots, to do things in the middle of nowhere, sometimes in incredible weather conditions, sandstorms, cold, hot, snakes.
Yeah.
I mean, these are all things that we deal with all the time and make work and make great TV out of it, make really great TV.
What else you got?
I just want to make a comment about the thing that I love most about the show is the fact that everything, the repercussions, will last the whole season. Whereas most shows, you know, something will happen in an episode and the next episode,
it's gone,
and you really feel them carry every decision that they make throughout the whole season.
Well, that is the nature of this piece. This is one long story. This is one. Like a Russian novel. This is Dostoevsky.
And so for the last season, I know you don't have to talk about the specifics, but I know it's going to be an 8-episode season. How important was it that you had those, you know, these next 16 episodes to tell the full story? Is that what it was from the beginning? It was really this 5-season arc, or like how does that?
I think Vince started talking about it being 5 seasons. About a season and a half ago.
Yeah.
I think that it was a possibility it could have gone another season beyond that, but he's feeling that this is what's necessary to tell the story.
Finish
the story. And it is one story. We're not doing a police procedural where we find the body and joke about it and arrest the wrong guy. Every story is different. Every story, my challenge as a line producer is, the show changes all the time. You know, one time we're in the house, and the next season we're almost never in the house.
Yeah.
We build a super lab in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Well, what do we do with this?
Now it's all gone.
Now, yeah. Well, you think.
Oh, and you guys start writing in 4 weeks?
They start writing in 4 weeks.
They start writing in 4 weeks?
4 weeks. They'll write, and we'll if the schedule is a little tentative, but right now we'll start filming mid-March.
One of the things I love about it, because it's not a procedural show, so little of it is expos. It's really just all behavior. These people just in their element, behaving. I find that's the most fascinating thing about it.
Yeah, there is no story structure that you can hang on to and go, oh, okay, now we're getting close to the end. Mm-hmm. I really got to. You don't know where you are in this story.
I have a clue.
And take a look at the second to last episodes last year and this year. Both were almost season enders in and of themselves.
Yeah.
If we had left Walt
on
curled up on that roof,
it could have been
like, okay, there's a cliffhanger to take you into next season, and then they could have, you know, killed Giancarlo then. Same way when we hit the guys and Walt turns to Jesse and says, run.
That was a cliffhanger.
Well, I called Vince up. I said,
What are you doing?
No, I said, let's stop now. You're never going to top that. And then the next script comes out and you go, oh, okay, great.
Okay, yeah, I guess you will.
You will. And he does.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part. But that literally was a phone call I made. So, you're never going to
Because I said the same thing when I saw it. I go, What?
Where are they going to go?
How are you going to? That is an amazing cliffhanger.
Yes.
Yeah. I do have one more question. Sure. I don't know if this is a hard for you to answer because maybe you're privy to a lot of stuff, but I'm curious what hopes you have for the final season as a fan of the show even. Like, are there, like, what relationships do you really want to see come to, you know, some kind of climax?
Oh, I haven't a clue.
Oh, you really?
Really? No?
Oh,
no.
No.
But, okay, but as a fan, would you like to see, for instance, I want Jesse to find out about Jan.
That's important to me, too. Yeah, I think that.
You do.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
I want to see him, because as an actor, I want to see Aaron go through that process and realize that this guy was responsible for her death. I want that. I want that conversation. But as a
Let
fan,
Vince know.
You know what? My goal for a long time has been a very simple one.
Yeah.
I want to be there when Walt dies.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
I was there.
For when he came to me. Heisenberg came up.
Yeah. When the show started, and I want to be there to see the final moment, mm-hmm. and I want to enjoy it as much as I can as a fan, and
the
fact that this has been
a
major part of my professional life, and you know, I will always be known for working on this show. When I go on to other shows, I've been on 4 other shows because we don't film all year round, and I'll go and I'll do a pilot or I'll do some other series. The writers want to know what happens on Breaking Bad. Because typically it's not on the air until I'm back here and working on something else. And so Monday is spent talking about Breaking Bad.
Of course.
This past Monday was, the Mondays before that.
Yeah.
It's spent. Writers admire the show because they realize what an incredible achievement it is.
Yeah.
And production people admire the show because they just can't figure out how we do some of the things that we do.
Nobody can. We're asking everybody.
Well, I got a call from the studio. What did you guys do with that helicopter? There's a terrific shot, very, very high angle shot in a couple of places. You see it this year. There's a nighttime shot of Walt walking toward Giancarlo's house.
Right.
And you see the shadows, and then, of course, he gets the phone call, go home, Walter.
Yeah.
You know, there's that. It looks like we're hundreds of feet in the air.
Mm-hmm.
We're not. I mean,
you're gonna tell us how
we're about 100 feet in the air, but it's lenses.
Uh-huh.
You know, the teddy bear crashing into the pool.
Right.
That was done with the largest construction crane I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Because you talk about what to do with a budget. Helicopter would have been about $25,000 because
just for that shot.
We don't have a helicopter there.
Sure, of course.
I mean, there are helicopters there, but they don't come with camera mounts and everything else. So the helicopter would have had to fly in from Los Angeles. That's a case where we brought a crane in. But that's only after, and there's a whole long story, I don't know if you have time for that, with a weather balloon idea. Where we were going to send a camera up on a weather balloon. Yeah, well, the tether broke and the camera went.
Oh! Oops!
Yeah, but that was during a test.
Okay.
So,
all right.
That was kind of fun.
So you ended up using a crane.
We ended up using a crane, and it worked beautifully. I mean, you think you're 2,000 or 3,000
feet
in the air.
Yeah.
And it was just, I mean, that's also a combination of CGI and mechanical effect of a real camera doing it. And a reversal. I mean, it starts off low and goes high. And then, of course, you've seen it. You see it the other way.
Yeah. Well, we could go on forever.
We could.
And I would love to just keep picking your brain about everything.
Okay.
Maybe we'll have you on next season.
Next season, that's when we're going to have you
come back.
Definitely. Whatever.
We would love to have you
come back. A lot of fun.
Thank you so much
My
for
pleasure.
Being here. More than anything, we thank you for all your hard work. I mean, you've been associated with, you've got an amazing resume. And to have this as part of it, I mean, thank you for all your hard work.
Put it that way. It's our pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to be part of whatever you bring to this audience, audiences. So we thank you for that. So I guess that's it. Jesse, we're gonna head on out now. So thank you, everybody, for listening. That was our what do we call that?
First,
I want to thank Ian Kaiser for being here, Phil Svitek, Jesse Janadine in Booth, and, of course, against Stu Lyons for coming out here and giving us the benefit of his experience. We appreciate that so much. Okay,
and
we're out of here. We got one more thing.
We also got to support AMC's podcast. We're fans of that one as well.
Yeah,
if you listen to us, you got to listen to that one as well.
Yeah, you do listen to that. You get some stuff there that we can't get here because...
Yeah.
They don't always tell us.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We're out.
From producers Kevin Undergaro and Phil Svitek, engineer DJ Jesse Janity, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. If you have questions or comments, be sure to buzz us at info@AfterBuzzTV.com. And you can find us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter by searching for AfterBuzz TV.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.